Tzadiki Sorolam. Tzadiki Sorolam means that the tzadik, koch of tzadik in the world, is such that when you stand in front of a person who receives directly from Hashem, the pasuk says in Tehillim, "Ine Hashem la tzadikim." We spoke a little bit about last week. "Ine Hashem la tzadikim," probably in the literal meaning of the pasuk, means that Hashem's eyes are always on the tzadikim. Hashem is watching the tzadikim. A certain special hashgacha pratis that Hashem makes sure to look out for the tzaddikim. But Eini Hashem la'tzaddikim means that also the tzaddikim have Hashem's eyes. And the tzaddik knows, the tzaddik is able to see with the eyes that Adam Rishon was able to see in the beginning of time. To see misofa olam ad sofa, to see from one end of the world to the next end of the world. And so, it's patently obvious to me that on Zos Chanukah, I was in the presence of a certain very special tzaddik, the Bi'al Rebbe. And he was talking to a young bar mitzvah bachur who was there. And as is the custom of the Jewish people, when a person reaches the day of their bar mitzvah, they give some sort of speech, pshetel. And amongst the Sfardim, the custom is there's a certain drasha that was printed by Rav Avadya Yosef, which is easy enough for a bar mitzvah bachur to understand, but hard enough that it's a little bit of a challenge for him to learn it and to say it over, and it's a big simcha. So this young boy got up in the middle of a farangin with the Bi'al Rebbe to say, and the Rebbe looked at him, but speaking to me, told this young man who was getting ready to ask the permission of the Holy Tzibur, and he said to this young boy, he said, "Bereshus Avi Mori v'Imi Morasi." And the kid, for some reason, didn't quite understand. And he started, "Bereshus Kol HaChashav Rabbanim, Bereshus HaAdmor." And the Rebbe said, "Maybe Rishus Admor. I don't know. I'm an Admor. Am I a Chashav Rava? But Kibud of Aim is one of the Aseres Hadibros. It's a mitzvah chamura, Kibud of Aim." And then he shared a teaching, which some of you saw in short, and my ksavim on Twitter. The Bi'al Rebbe shared a teaching that Yaakov Avinu, and the parshios that are coming up, Vayigash Vayichi, is really one inyan. Sfarim say, V'leib Le'eger writes that Vayigash and Vayichi are really like one parsha. There's no break in between, as we know. Vayigash Vayichi, Shmos, going straight into Galus. So in parshios Vayigash Vayichi, in the Vayichi part of it, Yaakov Avinu comes to bless the children of Yosef and to bless all of his children. And the Bi'al Rebbe shared a teaching that Hamalach Hagoel Osimi Kora Yivereches Hana'arim Vikara Behem Shemi B'Shem Avosai. That even though Yaakov Avinu possessed very great teachings, amazing mysteries of creation, names of Malachim, Hamalach Hagol, Osimikor, Yaakov Avinu literally spoke to Malachim. There's a halach in the Shulchan Aruch that when a person goes into a bathroom, it's on the books, it's based on the Gemara and the end of Brachos, when a person goes into the bathroom, so they're supposed to say, "Malachim, holy ones, stay here, I'm going into a place that's not fitting a Malach, stay here and wait for me, and when I come out, we'll get back together." It's a tefillah that you say before you go into the bathroom, just like you say, "Asher Yatzar," when you come out of the bathroom, is a hi ratzon that you say to ask the malachim to stay there. And the poskim say that nowadays we don't say such a tefillah unless a person's on an extremely high level. We don't speak to malachim, we don't tell malachim what to do. Yaakov Avinu, ha-malach ha-go'elosi mikora, the malach that's guarding me from all evil, yivarech es-hana'arim. But then Yaakov stopped for a second and he said, despite all of the great names of Hashem and the deep Torahs that I have, and he said, yivarech es-hana'arim b'shem avosai. A person has to realize that they don't have anything without their parents. They don't have anything without your parents. We literally have nothing without our parents. Whether your parents were like Yitzchak Avinu, or whether your parents are like Yitzchak Avinu and you don't realize that your parents are like Yitzchak Avinu, the only reason that you have a Jewish neshama, unless there's something that I don't know and someone here is a convert, in which case you all still have a father, his name is Avram. Your name is Ben Avram. The only reason that we have anything is because of our parents. My father's doing gematrias on the phone. Bereshis my father, and in absentia, my mother's not in the room right now, but Bereshis my mother, Bereshis my grandparents, great-grandparents. Bereshis Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, Moshe Aaron David and Shlomo, Yosef HaTzadik. Malach ha-goel ha-osim Malach ha-goel ha-osim mikora Yivarech es-ani-arim Ikarei baher shemi Malach ha-goel ha-osim Malach ha-goel osi mikora Yivarech es-ani-arim Ikarei barem shemi V'shem avosai, v'shem avosai Thank you. Svarim say that Kedusha is always found in a Seder. Kedusha is found when things are in order. So, I spoke with my father. I speak a little bit about some guests that we have who are visiting the land. The Torah says that when Yaakov Avinu came down to Mitzrayim, so the Torah says that Yosef was trying to set up for them that they should live in a special place. So Paro, it says, gave the Jewish people an opportunity to live Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Be'eretz Goshen. Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Be'eretz Goshen. So the Ishbitzer in the Mishiloch says, which one was it? Be'eretz Mitzrayim or Be'eretz Goshen? Doesn't say Be'eretz Mitzrayim Be'ir Goshen. Doesn't say Be'eretz Mitzrayim B'Shchunat Goshen. And here the Mishloach says, the Torah is revealing to us what Rabbi Nachman said in Likutei Maharan, that a person who has a heart is beyond space. There's no such thing as being in a particular space. That there's such a thing that the Jewish people could be Be'eretz Mitzrayim, B'toch Ervas Ha'aretz, in the most difficult of geographical spaces. And yet, even though a person is Be'eretz Mitzrayim, they could be Mamish Be'eretz Goshen. Inside of Eretz Mitzrayim, they can carve out for themselves a space, or they're Be'eretz Goshen. Everybody knows that the Torah refers to this place of Goshen several times in the narratives of Am Yisrael being in Mitzrayim, our sojourn in Egypt. And occasionally, instead of referring to it as Goshen, the Torah will call it Goshna. And seeing as we're post-Chanukah, it's important to point out that the Sfarim say that Goshna are the osios that are on the dreidel. Goshna, Gimel Shin Nun and Hey. Specifically, the letters that are on the dreidel when a person is in exile. When a person is Shem. This place of Goshen, where the Jewish people were able to be themselves, even in a hostile environment, as the Ishbitzer says, is the way of the Torah telling us that it's possible for a person to create, to carve out space for himself, and to create an Eretz within an Eretz. Goshen has the same numeric value as Mashiach. When Yosef HaTzadik goes down to Mitzrayim, and he's trying to create a holy space for himself, and he ends up mamish in the Sar HaTabachim. He ends up in the butcher's home. Rav Nosson Breslover writes in the Kutei Halachos that the butcher always, whenever there's a butcher in Tanakh, whenever there's a butcher in the Gemara, the butcher is always symbolic of the Yetzer Hara. Hua Yetzer Hara, Hua Malach HaMaves VaSatan, the Shochet Da'alma, one who's looking to slaughter the world. And if a person wants to be able to live in the headspace of Mashiach, even when they're in the house of Potiphar, the answer is always Goshna. Can I carve out a space for myself within Potiphar's house? That's a little bit Mashiachic. Which is a place which is miyuchad, which is set aside for nothing else other than to further the agenda of Mashiach, which is the agenda of Mesiach, to be able to speak to Hashem. Mashiach means the one who gets us to speak to Hashem. Mashiach, Lashon Mesiach. Which is why the whole parsha is talking upstairs to one of my best friends. We were talking about how the Svarim, many different Svarim, told us Yaakov Yosef and others, explained that the conversation between Yehuda and Yosef in the beginning of the parsha, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Vayigash Elav Yehuda Vayomer Bi Adoni. Yedaber now Avdecha, let your holy servant, let your humble servant come and speak a few words. Daber ba'azne Adoni, and I speak in my master's ears. V'ayichar apecha ba'avdecha, don't be angry at your servant, ki kamocha kaparo. The Svarim explained, Vayigash Elav Yehuda doesn't say Vayigash Yehuda El Yosef. Number one, because he didn't know it was Yosef at the time. But also because the Torah wanted purposely to leave it as a dangling pronoun. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda was not approaching Yosef, but Yehuda, thinking that he was approaching some Egyptian man, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Yehuda was approaching Hashem. Vayomer bi Adoni, please, my God. Yosef thinks that Yehuda is talking to him. Yehuda wants Yosef to think that he's talking to him, but he's not talking to Yosef. Yedaber na avdecha dvar ba'azne Adoni. That the Torah wants us to know that Vayigash begins with tefillah, and all throughout, the entire parsha is crying and bechios. That even if the gate of tefillah is closed, the gate of tears is never closed. But that's why the Ishbitzer says that Vayigash, the whole parsha of Vayigash, comes from that lashon of Goshna. Goshna means to draw close. Vayigash is lashon of Goshna, drawing close to Hashem and tefillah, of creating a private space for oneself, a little physical space, but also a spiritual space and a spiritual time, when he can carve out and to say, afal pi that I'm in Eretz Mitzrayim, afal pi that I'm in Potiphar's house, if I create a Goshna for myself, I could be zocha to Mashiach.
Yeah.
of the great mysteries in the Torah. Is that when Am Yisrael is described as going down to Mitzrayim? When the Jewish people are going down to Mitzrayim, and now every time, either after something remarkable happens or something tragic happens, the Torah has a way of wanting to, just like in a family, you know? When something difficult happens, chas v'shalom lo'aleinu, something happens, so we'll make sure to touch base with everybody. You okay? You okay? You okay? You okay? You okay? So the Torah has this funny way that every time something tragic is about to happen, or just happened, or something remarkable happened, a big shift, the Torah counts the Jewish people. And at this point, as the Jewish people are going down to Mitzrayim, so Hashem makes a big esek in His Torah about counting the Jewish people. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Huda, everyone okay? Children, everyone okay? And the Torah tells us there are 70 people who are going down to Mitzrayim. Except that when the Torah counts these 70 people, we fall short by one. And the Rishonim and the Achronim are trying to give different answers to try to figure out who are these different people who are being born as we're entering into Mitzrayim. These people who are born, people who died along the way, Yehuda's children, to try to add one, take away two. Chushim ben Dan. Dan has a son named Chushim. It's in plural. Maybe that's two people named Chush. Chushim. Trying to play all these different tricks. Hashem is counted in the 70. Yaakov is one of the 70. But I'm a simple Jew, and a simple Jew learns Rashi. Rashi says that even when we attempt to count, perhaps this is a hint, maybe this is why Rashi felt so strongly about it, when we try to count the people going down to Mitzrayim, we find that not only are there only 69 instead of 70, but the problem is that when the pasuk says Eila b'nei Leia asher yalda liyakov bepadan aram v'esdina bito kol nefesh banav b'nosav shloshim v'shalosh, that Leia and her descendants are supposed to have, they're supposed to be 33 names mentioned. There's only 32, which means that the problem probably needs to be resolved in the children of Leah. And so Rashi tells us, Shloshim v'shalosh, u'befirtan, i'atamutzi el alamid beis. But when you count them, you'll only find that there are 32, not 33, so why does the Torah say there are Shloshim v'shalosh? Ella, rather, says Rashi, zu yocheved, shenolda ben hachomos, b'knisasan le'ir. This refers to yocheved. And the reason that she's missing from the count is because even though 70 went down to Mitzrayim, Yocheved didn't actually go down to Mitzrayim with Yaakov. She was born at the gate as they were about to enter in. They were at passport control and they asked Leah for her passport and she said, oh, just give me 1 second. And all of a sudden she went into labor and gave birth to Yocheved. Seriously? Now she wants us to believe that's what happened. So like I told you, I'm a simple person. And if Rashi says that's what happened, then that's what happened. Yocheved was born right as they were entering into Mitzrayim. And the Sfarim say, you think that Yocheved was born at the entrance of Mitzrayim just so that we could be mashlim, the 33 souls of Leah, the 70 souls that went down to Egypt. Yocheved was born as they were entering into Mitzrayim because Yocheved is the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Jewish people cannot step foot into Mitzrayim until the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu is born. Because every time there's going to be a difficulty for the Jewish people, we need to be able to look back at this pasuk and to say that just like the mother of the Moshiach Shal Yisrael was born before we even entered into this mess in the first place, it must be that whatever difficulty I'm facing, financial, emotional, psychological, spiritual, whatever is going to give birth to the Yeshua is already here. I don't know exactly how the Yeshua is going to come. I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to be saved from this situation. But I believe that Hashem already put into place the necessary measures that will get me out of this. Yocheved is born before Dafka, the moment we're about to enter into Mitzrayim, so that we can look and see and be sure that any time in our lives we face any difficulty whatsoever, there's a guarantee from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself that the mother, so to speak, that force which will give birth to the Moshiach Shel Yisrael, to the Yeshua, already exists in the world. There's nothing to worry about. Who is the Moshiach Shel Yisrael? Who is the one whose mother needs to be born to be mashlem those 70 souls? So everyone knows that Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen to save the Jewish people because Moshe Rabbeinu cared about other people. Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to put everything on the line to help another Jew. And then to make shalom between two Jews. And then to help some non-Jewish girls by a well. So there's a beautiful teaching from Rav Huttner, which is based on the Maharal, like most of the teachings of Rav Huttner. Where the Maharal basically wants to understand why is it that when the Jewish people went down to Mitzrayim, there had to be 70 souls going down. Why 70?
Yamin, nations. David.
So there's a pasuk towards the end of the Torah that says that the numbers of souls that went out to Egypt are keneged the Shivim Amin, 70 nations. And at the head of all of the 70 nations, as explained in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, Daf Beis, at the head of all of the 70 nations stands the archetypical personality of Esav, Esav ben Yaakov. And everybody knows that the last time we saw Esav, and the last time we see Esav in the Torah, is after Yaakov and Esav have that embrace. And Esav says, "Why don't you come with me?" And Yaakov says, "I have to go back to Eretz Yisrael. And my kids don't walk so fast, and I have to be sensitive to them." But at that moment, Rashi tells us Esav leaves to go to Har Seir. And Rashi fills in the gaps that Esav says, "Yaakov, what are you going to Eretz Yisrael for? What are you busy with Eretz Yisrael? Don't you know? Don't you know that whoever inherits Eretz Yisrael has to first go through the pain of going to Mitzrayim? I'm not interested," says Esav, "in the pain, and I'm not interested in the reward." And Esav walks away. And he goes and he settles himself down in Har Seir, and he has a bunch of kids, and the Torah spells it all out. Not only kids, he has powerful chieftains. Aluf this and aluf that. It's not stam, the Torah calls someone an aluf. But because Esav doesn't know how to bear the pain of another person, and because he's not interested in going through a little bit of pain to get something, because he abandons his brother in a moment of pain, so it's dafka that when we go down to Mitzrayim, says Rav Huttner, that is the moment of split. That's the moment when there's a split between the two things. 70 souls have to go down to Mitzrayim because the moment of choosing to leave the Jewish people, which gave rise to these 70 different nations, was the moment when Esav decided to split from Yaakov and say, I'm not interested in being Nosid Ba'ol. I'm not going to carry this burden together with my brother. The story about the Choz of Lublin, which I shared a number of years ago here, that I first heard from my Rebbe many, many years ago. You know, the Choz of Lublin, when the Choz needed to get a haircut, it wasn't Stam, I also needed to get a haircut, in case anybody... We'll have, yeah, after the story, I'll make a funny joke. The Choz of Lublin needed to get a haircut, and by the Choz of Lublin, you know, getting a haircut was not just Stam getting a haircut. So, who's going to have this chus of giving the chus of Lublin a haircut? So they had tryouts, you know. It's not like my joke now. We can have tryouts after shave. I'll try out to shave my head. Who's going to do it? So the chus of Lublin, they had tryouts. And you can imagine how people are trying to prepare for this. You know, going to the mikvah, the gematria of the word haircut. Anybody? Anyway, so they're going to the mikveh 340 times, and they're saying all of Sefer Tehillim, and they're saying more Sefer Tehillim, and they're trying to finish all of Shas Mishnayos, and they're fasting, and they're davening, and crying, and they're waiting online for their turn. And every single time, somebody would walk in, and they'd pick up the scissors, and they would grab the Choz of Lublin's hair to take the first snip. And as soon as they would even touch his hair, he would start screaming, ow, ow, ah. And the Gabbai would, okay, get out, get out, get out, get out. Lechu, lechu, get out. And one after another, the Lamdonim and the Tzadikim and the different people in the city are coming in. So finally, there's like nobody left. So the Gabbaim are like searching up and down the street, trying to find somebody. And suddenly they see there's this strange-looking fellow standing on the side of the corner, and he's wearing like one of those, you know, like Nebuch, the people who have to like, they earn, I don't even know if that chever earns minimum wage. You know, they wear like the, it's like a little string over their shoulder and like two signs, one on the front, one on the back. And on the front of the sign it says, I'm a barber. I'm a barber. And then on the back it says, and also a little bit of a doctor. And they're like, okay, this guy's interesting. So they walk over and they say, sir, you know, the Choz of Lublin needs a haircut. And, you know, a lot of people have been trying, but maybe you're a barber. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he's looking for like a, maybe he wants like a certain style of haircut. He's waiting for... Maybe you want to just come try? He said, me? I want to go give the Choz of Lublin a haircut. So he goes to the Choz of Lublin. They convince him to come. And he walks in, terrified. He takes off his little sign. He puts it down in the corner. And they give him the scissors. And he picks up the scissors. And he walks over to the Choz of Lublin. And he takes a lock of the Choz of Lublin's hair. And the Choz of Lublin says, ah, ah, ah. And he takes a sniff. And he says, ah, Gan Eden, ah. Ah, wonderful. And he's giving snip after snip, and the Choz of Lublin's going, ah, wonderful. And the Choz of Lublin's laughing, he's having a good time. And he finishes the haircut, and now the Gabbaim are like, they need to figure out, like, who is this guy? So they say, who are you? He says, I think it's pretty clear, my sign's out. I'm a barber, and a little bit of a doctor. So they're like, you come with us. So they take him to the local tavern, the local Kretschmer. And they say, buy this man a drink. He just gave the Choz of Lublin a haircut. It's on us. One drink, two drinks, three drinks, 10 drinks. You know, he wants him to tell you a secret, so. Finally, after who knows how long, the guy is so open and he's so, that they say, so can you tell us, what's your story, what's your deal? So the guy says, you really want to know? You want to know who I am? So I say, yeah, tell us who you are. So he says, come with me. And they leave the tavern. And they go to this back alley. And the barber takes off his sign that says, I'm a barber and a little bit of a doctor. And he turns around, and he lifts up the back of his shirt, just like this. And the gabayim are standing there, and they see this guy has like, mamash like cuts all over his back. These big scars, deep scars. And he says to the gabayim, he said, I was one time standing on the street corner, looking for a little business. And I saw some soldiers come over and started harassing this poor little Yidle. And they were yelling at him and they were saying, you stole this and that. And he said, I didn't steal anything, I promise I didn't steal anything. And said, you admit you stole right now, or we're going to beat you till you pass out. We're going to kill you right here on the spot. He said, at the last minute, before they were about to take this guy down, I saw, because I'm a barber, but I'm also a little bit of a doctor, and I saw that if this guy gets hit once or twice, he's going to be, forget it, he's going to die, he's going to be dead. And I know, I'm a big guy. I'm a big guy, I can take it. And I see that he's there with his family, and I don't even have a family. He said, so I ran over to one of these people who knew he didn't steal anything and who knew that nothing was stolen. And I ran over to him and I said, I stole it. It was me. I stole it. I was the one who stole it. Leave him alone. And I was like, you stole it. Well, like, come on. He knew nothing was stolen. He said, it was me. It was me. Leave him alone. So I said, okay, it was you. Fine, Beseder. Another Yid. Doesn't matter. And he said, and they took me and they put me on the floor and they started beating me over the back until I was bleeding, until I eventually passed out. I thought I died. He said, what the Chosev Lublin was feeling when I was giving him the haircut was the feeling of taking a hit for another Yid. Taking a hit for another Jew. When Esav left Yaakov, when he said, I'm out of here, I'm not really interested in going down to Mitzrayim. I'm not really interested in another Jew suffering. There was a cosmic split. The only reason that there are 70 nations is because Esav abandoned Yaakov at the moment when there were 70 souls going down to Mitzrayim. That created the split between the descendants of Yaakov and the descendants of Esav. So a Jew has to know how to look out for his fellow Jew. He needs to know how to take pain in order to get to something great. As one of the great Jewish singers of all time said, Al Hadvash Ve'al Ha'Oketz. We're not going to sing that next. Al Hadvash Ve'al Ha'Oketz. You have to be able to, if you want the honey, you have to take the sting a little bit. So Hashem should bless us that no Jewish people should have to take any pain. There should be no pain for the Jewish people. There should be no pain for anybody. Why should there be pain for anybody? We have to know how to stand together and to be able to say, if my brother's in pain, then I have to be in pain also. But to be in pain doesn't mean that I have to do something, God forbid, to hurt myself. Just a little bit, a little bit. Can it be? I'm not saying it's not complicated, I'm not saying it's a simple matter. But can it be that there was one of our own brothers who, after witnessing a person come and stab two soldiers, can it be that that person was convicted of manslaughter? I'm not saying it's a simple thing, but can it be that person was convicted of manslaughter in the public eye, and that newspapers are saying about this person? Ki'ilu, these two people were doing the same thing. Can it be that a person should be convicted of manslaughter and be embarrassed in front of the whole world and self-righteous newspapers and magazines, and we just have like a regular day. We don't think about it. It's not possible. Not when Yocheved is born to make the 70th soul going down to Mitzrayim. Can it be that we'll just be in our little bubble and we don't check a few weeks ago when I don't understand. I mean, I said it a few weeks ago, but I'll say it again. Not that I know that people are doing this here. And I don't. It's a big part of me that doesn't believe that that's true. But can it be that a person has a few minutes free time? Forget. Spending time learning and things like, can it be that a person has a few minutes free time in college and they jump on the computer in the library or whatever and they go to ESPN.com before going to Times of Israel, J-Post, Art Sheva, whatever, you pick your newspaper. Is that possible? Is it possible to know every set list of, you know, whatever fish show or whatever other thing, to know every single set list back and forth, but not know the names of the soldiers who died a few years ago when we had the... Is it possible? The story about the Satmar Rebbe, that the Satmar Rebbe, one time, I'll say short, well, Satmar Rebbe one time was attempting, you know, after the Holocaust, the details of the story I'm a little, I don't have exactly, but I'll say them as if, ki'ilo, in terms of the locations. This reminds me of the Satmar Rebbe, that the Satmar Rebbe was a chassid who lived in Williamsburg. And he was an older man, and he was married once before, and he had some kids, and he was trying to get remarried, and he came to the Rebbe, and he said, I'm trying to find the right person. He said, the truth is, there's someone, the daughter of one of my Hasidim, who I know, after the war, moved to L.A., moved to Los Angeles, moved to California. And she came from a very special family, and she, when she was younger, she was very special, but I've sent money a few times, but I haven't really, I don't know where she is. This is not exactly the time, and even if it was, I'm not sure she would be on Facebook, you know what I'm saying? Satmar Rebbe didn't have, there was no way to have, she was halfway across the country. So he sent money when he could, but he said, I don't know like what her, I don't know if the shidduch is shaykh, before you fly out there, let me. So he said, let me call, I have some chassidim that I'm in touch with over there, let me call one of the chassidim over there and find out what her matzav is. So he called one of his chassidim who lived in California, and he said, I have this, I'm trying to make this shidduch, I haven't been, you know, do you know what's the matzav with this almana? So he said, sure, Rebbe, just give me a day or two, I'll figure it out, I'll call you back, I'll tell you exactly everything that's going on. So the Satmar Rebbe said, you call yourself one of my chassidim? He said, you live two blocks away from this woman who's an almana, who has all these kids and is all by herself, and you don't know what her situation is. No sibba olam chaveiro. Someone else is in pain right down the block from me, you don't even know. Yecholio, is that possible? I have to try our best. Hashem doesn't want us to be perfect. We can't know. We can know every person who's in pain. And like I said before, there should be no one who's in pain. Like one of my rabbis, Rav Machlis always says when he meets different types of doctors and stuff. He meets a cardiologist. I hope you go out of business. You know, you'll be no. Don't get me wrong. I want you to have a good parnasa. You'll be like the chief historian of how there used to be heart disease. You know, and you'll know all the diseases that used to be. You'll give big history classes in the colleges about how there used to be this thing called cancer, and there used to be this thing called heart disease, and there used to be this thing. So there shouldn't be any pain. But like Tzaddikim said, Hashem should help us until He helps us. And the way that He helps us sometimes is that we help each other, that we look out for each other, and we try to make sure that we're taking care of each other. There shouldn't be a single Jew who's born in pain without there being another Jew there to say, I understand what you're going through. I'll try to help you as best I can. That's all Hashem wants from us. To try to think about other people just for a few minutes. Hashem should have nachas from us. Hi, Albert. Oh, come on, every week. Potatoes. Baruch Hu Eloheinu Shemanu Limodam Baruch Hu Eloheinu minutes, huh?
More Torah.
15.
All night.
What are we going to do, huh? It's going to be unbelievable. Every week it's a different string, though. That's the good news. That was a high E string.
The strings correlate to like the
10th. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Father, would you like to elaborate? Not necessary. I think it's okay. You know, mitzas shvacha b'fun of my father, but there is a maisa that one time a car door slammed on my father's finger, and you know, there are 10 fingers; they correspond to the 10 commandments. And instead of screaming "ow," he screamed out whatever one of the 10 commandments or something correspond to that finger. I don't tell stories like that about you or me. I'll tell you that much.
Oh,
Just end with a brief thought. Different kinds of mitzvos. Some mitzvos which are referred to by the language of the Gemara and the Rishonim as Chovas Gavra. Something which is specific to a particular person. Those are the types of mitzvos that a person can't do as a shlichus for you. If anybody here wants to try to say, you know, Lamashal, I'm not going to put on tefillin today, but I'll appoint a shliach to do it for me. So there's a chovas aguf. The guf needs to wear tefillin. There's no. But then, of course, everybody knows there's certain types of mitzvahs where you could appoint a shliach to do it for you, or. Doesn't necessarily have to be. So a long time ago, somebody pointed out to me, the first time I heard it in the name of the Sefer HaChinuch, but I haven't been able to find it in there. Sometimes I quote in the name of the Sefer HaChinuch, sometimes I don't. But I first heard it from the Sefer HaChinuch. It's not in the Sefer HaChinuch, unless it's hiding somewhere that I haven't found. In all the places you would expect it to be, but this. They say from the author of the Sefer HaChinuch, which is even more hard to believe because it's written anonymously. So that Hashem could have made it that Shabbos would be something which is a chovah on every person as an individual. Could have been. Hashem could have made it that way. Could have made it that, dependent on, let's say, I was born on a Tuesday. So I would count Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday would be my seventh day of rest. And another person was born on a Wednesday, and Tuesday would be their day of rest. Or if you want to say from the bar mitzvah, maybe the bar mitzvah, the chalos of the bar mitzvah, you count 7 days, whatever day your bar mitzvah is on, that year, and then you count 7 days, and that becomes your Shabbos for life. But Hashem, in His great kindness to the Jewish people, didn't want that there should be that one Jew should have Shabbos on a Monday, another Jew should have Shabbos on a Tuesday, another one has it on Wednesday, and some have it on Saturday. And Hashem wanted it to be that everybody should be able to have Shabbos on the same day. He could have made it that way. We have other mitzvos like that, where it's based on your body, how it counts, count 7 days. Every person's bar mitzvah is determined by the day that they were born. Hashem decided that Shabbos has to be 7 days. Everybody has it together, which is an amazing chesed. That Hashem gave us the opportunity to have Shabbos together. So I want to give everyone a piece of advice. Right before we begin Maariv, after Bama Madlikin, there's a little brisele at the end of Bama Madlikin. That refers to the Hilchas Rabbis, the Shabbos. It's the great rule of Shabbos, which is that as a person is going into Shabbos, Brisa says, you should make sure to check your pockets. Check your pockets. So I once heard from one of my rabbis that part of checking your pockets is not just checking your pockets to make sure you don't have any pens or if there's no air of anything in your pockets. Part of checking your pockets is making sure that you're not carrying around any baggage of old machlokas between you and your friend, between you and your parents, between you and your sibling. When you say that paragraph of check your pockets, it's a little bit too late. So Thursday is a good time to remind yourself of this. The Hilchas Rabbis al-Shabbos is, before you go into Shabbos, make sure you check your pockets. Make sure you're not carrying around anything which is going to make pirud between one Jew and another. Hashem didn't make Shabbos that way. Hashem made Shabbos, we keep it all on the same day. Every time before I start to give mostly any shir, but certainly the shir on Thursday, I stop and I daven to Hashem that I should say things that need to be said and they should be heard in the way that they need to be heard. I have no idea why I'm saying this right now. But somebody here needs to hear this. And we should make sure, and we all need to hear it, Lamaisa. We should make sure that our pockets are empty. Empty pockets doesn't just mean there's no muksa, but it means that we're not carrying around any baggage. No, we should have Shabbos together. All the Jewish people should have Shabbos together. Didi da, didi da, shah.